Welcome back to What Have You. I'm Rachel Jankovic.
I'm Becca Merkel.
Guys, we got coffee. We got a phone. We're sitting in the car.
Also, guys, you should know, because unless we tell you, you wouldn't know. We've been really diligent to record podcasts the last 2 weeks.
Yeah.
The problem was they were both
real
bad.
It was like the time that I recently, as a pretty experienced baker, no less, made bread with dead yeast, and I noticed that it didn't look like it was going anywhere.
Wow.
But I still put it in the oven. It was just...
I've never actually had dead yeast, and I've always... Every recipe makes a to-do about...
I know, I've also always thought the same thing. I don't struggle with this, but I think it got... whatever the case, I had reason to wonder, and then it didn't seem super lively. And it definitely was out of gas before I put it in the oven, because when I put it in the oven, it just sort of didn't do anything.
Yeah.
But my point is, that's basically how Becca and I made podcasts, is we made two podcasts that weren't fit to be seen.
No, they were bad.
But that just goes to say that we didn't forget about you.
No, we didn't. We struggled in the first one. I was trying to talk to Rachel about something, and she was trying to talk to me back about something else.
It was 1,000% the moment in Pride and Prejudice where she's saying, "Kitty, my love, come do something." She's going, "Why are you winking at me, Mama?" I was like, "What are you trying to talk about, Becca? I don't know why Becca's trying to delicately broach a subject."
Well, you can't say, like, Rachel...
You know.
The thing that Schwartz put on Facebook that was so dumb. That thing.
Well, as it turns out, we canceled. We have our new podcast routine of cancel culture. We record it. We delete it. We never send it out to you all.
But you'll be happy to know that we have recorded them. So.
Yeah, because it just means we thought of you.
Yeah.
We thought of you. It wasn't really nice. No. I mean, we just didn't do a good job, but we thought of you.
They were bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So since we got together, though, last, I went to the G3 conference.
Yeah,
and
that's right.
We've had other things happening, but it has gotten I feel like my brain has been fizzing ever since about it. Because something that's so interesting always about getting out with other believers is that all of a sudden you get a very different perspective on other circles than your, if you only run in your own circles, sometimes you fail to catch what other people are actually dealing with, mm-hmm. or where they act, what kinds of places they are. But what really stood out to me, and it was so fun to meet a number of you podcast listeners there anyways, that was fun. But what stood out to me that was really interesting is a theme that you and I talk about all the time, which is the domestic not being less than the
corporate, or
the domestic. No, I'm saying that this was, and this is a vast generalization. This kind of a conference, you're dealing with a lot of people who know their Bibles and know their arguments and know what they believe.
Sure.
So they're very strong on their positions.
Okay.
What they believe. But that it's what just has been striking me lately, and not just there, but just in the world at large, is even in the Christian world where you have all these people who are standing strong for complementarianism and not, they're mm-hmm. trying to put a stake in the ground and good, solid biblical ground, but that even there, they're not willing to look domesticity in the face as a actual legitimate thing to spend your time and energy pursuing.
But here's what I was talking to Ben about the other day. I was saying it is very funny. Maybe this came out of talking to you. I don't remember. Or maybe I said it to you. Who knows? But I'm quoting myself.
Maybe
from the other
already
day.
Podcasted about
might
this one.
I might have be repeating myself too much. But it's one thing to say older women should teach the younger women to et cetera, et cetera. Now, there's two ways of going about that. One is to teach the younger women to to be domestic. And the other one is to teach the younger women that the older women are supposed to teach the younger women that they're supposed to be domestic.
It's like the Russian dolls of argumentation. Yeah, where it's like, nary a recipe.
No, there's no recipes, but there's a lot of Greek word studies. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, there's totally a place for that, but...
No, because, no, there's not a place for that. There's a place for Greek word studies. There's no place for women doing the Greek word study and not coming out the other end with a practical application.
Yeah.
And I kept thinking about Titus 2.
But the thing is I understand the dilemma because we live in a moment that disparages the whole thing. So there's a lot of effort being put into intellectual defenses of older women teaching younger women to be domestic. But at the end of the day... What good is it unless some people come out of it being domestic? Mm-hmm. Rather than
what being, have you really done here?
Rather than being experts in the field of knowing that people should be domestic.
Right, but what I think struck me so much and was interesting and like is the fact that we still, and I think this is not, I just want to be clear, I'm not only talking about at the conference I went to. I'm talking about evangelical Christendom.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to hashtag this with all you who I just met. That's not what I'm doing. But it was just this topic got me thinking a lot, and it got, you know, it was like this was just a thing that was coming up repeatedly for me lately. And that is that we think things like, yay, Titus 2. Mm-hmm. But not so much that we think, so where are the, like, I want to say, like, we would not say godliness can be seen sometimes of someone's notes in the margins of their cookbook. Do you know what I mean? Like,
you got too many negatives going there, and so now you're going to have to restate.
Keep up with me. I'm being really sharp right now.
When you say we and they, then double negatives, who are the we, who are the they?
Here's what I'm saying. Listen to Titus 2, part. Let me find it first, because I'm not looking for the part about bond servants. Okay, let's see. The older women likewise, that they be reverent in behavior, not slanderers, not given to much wine, teachers of good things. I want to put a bookmark on that and come back to that. That they admonish a young woman to love their husbands, to love their children, to be discreet, chaste, homemakers, good, obedient to their own husbands, that the word of God may not be blasphemed. That part that just says teachers of good things, that Paul goes on to say loving their husbands, loving their children, as though I think he's sort of filling out what are the good things.
Sure.
But so many Christians think the good things are like the attributes of God.
Oh, sure.
And that this is a total postscript that also you should love your... Like, that they are honing in on this. And I was saying, well, the thing I was saying about your cookbook is sort of like, based off of this, a really diligently faithful woman doing what she's told to do here, who's teaching the younger women and working on all of these things... What she's actually doing would not look like a Greek word study. It would look like a lot of notes in the margins of your recipe, of your cookbook, and your, like, very practical.
And hopefully your Bible as well. But
you all know where I stand on the fact that you should read your Bibles. So yeah, I feel like
But to not see there being a disconnect between reading your Bible and then going out and making the food.
And not thinking that you're doing a lesser spiritual task now, when you turn from reading the Bible to living like a Christian woman who's loving her home and her children, her husband.
Although, I do think that people would immediately jump to the Mary Martha question, which is like, Mary chose the better part, right? Which is sitting at the feet of Jesus.
But I thought we...
And listening to his teaching.
I think I've always thought that was because Martha was choosing to have a tude about Mary. Not that Martha was doing the wrong thing, that she... Well, she seems like she was having a hospitality crisis.
She's flustered with much serving.
Yeah. She's like, but look at that Mary just sitting there.
Right, but Jesus does say... She chose the better part. You know, like, if Christ is there, you should be listening up. So, I don't know. I'm just saying it is understandable that people would think, now, don't go getting too caught up in your housework.
I know, but I think it's interesting because... So this just, this kind of thing comes up because it's in Screwtape Letters, right, where he talks about the trick is to get everyone to be breaking out the fire extinguishers in a flood.
Yes.
And I think right now, in the world of teaching women things,
yeah,
the flood is feminism and just total despisal for your home and home duties and children.
Right.
And it's the Christians who are getting out the fire extinguishers to assure us all that we should be studying theology and we should not be, right? Like, that they are, but what nobody seems to be doing is saying, let's just get into this, though.
I think here's the deal, is that of course we should study theology. Of course women should know what they believe. But theology is no good to anyone ever unless it then translates down to how they behave and how they live and how they obey.
Right. So,
and that's true for the men and the women both, is that the theology by itself
means nothing.
Does nothing. And so it has to then come out your fingertips.
If you have excellent theology and you're not living it, then it's like, here's a battery that's great, except for that it's dead.
Well, this is like,
all the parts are in place, but without the obedience and without the action, yeah, it's not living, because that's how we know.
So when we were in Oxford, Ben had, well, there were just a number of funny things, but you see these outrageous, it looks to me like such a contradiction that I don't understand how somebody maintains that. So there was a professor who he's basically like the leading world's foremost scholar on like the martyrs during the Reformation and the doctrine and everything else, but he's not a believer and he's a homosexual and not, but he's his whole life is given to studying this, and you're like, I wonder why. That's very odd that you would choose to spend all your time reading and writing about this subject that you don't believe in. Or there were, when Ben was studying Hebrew, there were all of these Jewish scholars who, for instance, would get very, very skittish about using the name of God and that kind of a thing. All of them kept kosher. All of them, you know, wearing the yarmulkes and doing everything exactly right. Not a one of them believed in God. All of them are completely secular, except for they keep all of this, because it's a sort of a cultural, you know, it means something to them culturally.
That's one of the things that where we've gotten really naive is in thinking that there is no motivation for religious, the trappings of religion that is not a heart that's right with God, because that's what happens in Christian circles, is that we often think the trappings of religion are in fact evidence instead of it being a different kind of fruit.
But I'm just saying it's completely possible to live this kind of strangely schizophrenic life where what you spend all your intellectual time doing has nothing to do with how you're actually living. And I think that there are a lot of people who could spend all their time learning theology, writing theology, talking theology, and yet live completely disobedient lives.
Right.
And
consequently have real bad theology, because
but not always
I'm saying proper theology except for the part where you're not doing it.
Well,
that's
where
what
Jesus
I meant.
Said do as, you know, do as they say, not as they do, kind of a thing.
Exactly.
Because there are people who have all of their T's crossed and all of their I's dotted, and yet they're not actually out there obeying.
And interestingly, there are also people who have wackadoodle theology and are nonetheless full of the joy of the Lord and really pursuing Him. And I think it just sometimes that kind of thing is so good for us to see that God is much bigger than us.
Of course women should learn theology. Of course all Christians should know what they believe. But it's not enough to stop there. It actually then needs to come out in
expressions. And one of the things that I love is how absolutely huge this is. This command in Titus 2 is so huge, but very inspecific. He's not telling us exactly how to do it.
No.
He's not. Just imagine if the word of God was like, I would like the women, you know, to be sober-minded, diligent, decorating in the shabby chic style.
I know. Vacuuming like, on this schedule.
They're going to need to wash the dishes with this kind of a sponge, and they're going to have to, I mean, think of it. And the thing that's funny is that you were talking about the Jewish faith, and there you have the kinds of things where they have, through the years, developed an incredible litany of things you have to do that are very specific.
Yeah, and I don't know. I think, of course, it's like starting baseline. We should know that the Bible does say older women, you should teach the younger women to do this. But then, are we going to obey it or are we not? Are we just going to sit around talking about that? And so I feel like that's the transition to domesticity, where lots of people are hesitant to go there because that seems like it could get a little legalistic, a little embarrassing, right. A little bit not what our culture admires right now.
No, and it feels clumsy to be like, let's talk about what we're gonna talk about now. Brownies. Let's talk about, like, I mean, it can feel awkward, but at the same time, it's so important that we be willing to just throw ourselves into what God has clearly spelled out that we should be doing. I'd just like to say that I'm hardly an academic. So just don't think I'm trying to break the toaster boasting on that one. But as someone who was well educated, I just like to say that there is no academic challenge quite like the literal challenge of trying to run a home and trying to keep your children fed and cleaned and organized and
there's a reason they refer to the ivory tower. Nobody's ever referred to homemaking as the ivory tower.
I think it just feels like it is not a intellectually vacant task to do it. I think it could be.
You could make it that
way. You could make it that way if you really wanted, if you purposed in your heart to make it that way. But I know a lot of very intelligent, well-educated women who feel fully challenged by the work that they're doing at home. And not in a poor me, I have to keep repeating my duties way. More like, this is a very challenging role. It just is a challenging role.
You can make it challenging, or you can make it not challenging. And I think that's...
I actually think that's not true. Actually, you can either try to rise to the challenge, or try to sink below the challenge.
Well, sure, but I just mean, it's like, you could go to the gym, and you could go ahead and, I don't know, pretend to do crunches, and you could cheat on your push-ups.
Take a nap at the gym.
You could turn the treadmill all the way down, and like it. At the end of the day, it really, you're the one that decides whether you're going to push yourself or whether you're going to just kind of put out off.
But I
on
think
the
it's
side.
like Chesterton had that great in Brave New Family, right? Would be in Brave New Family, where he just talks about the woman's role of introducing children to the entire world, like to everything, like that it's not the smallness of the job that is overwhelming, it's the bigness of it, and that when people, you know, flounder and die over this being such a, it seems to me like when people don't want to do it anymore, or when they want to make light of it, they never are doing it because it's so challenging, I can't rise to the challenge. It's because they want it to be like, it's not rewarding, it's miserable, it's, maybe they would say it's hard, but they would not say it's like, not like a challenge that's in any way prestigious.
But you know what it is? I think it's maybe, I don't know, maybe I'm just being weird, but it seems like the difference between whether you approach it as a calling or as a job. Because if you went and got a job at, I don't know, Hardee's restaurant.
Oh, Can we have to tell them why that tickled us so much?
I just had a huge flashback. Inexplicable that we went off the rails about Hardee's. That's amazing.
Oh,
well, just
all I can say is I'm just remembered what Becca warned her job interview.
Which is so funny because I just
but
said
she
Hardee's.
Never worked there.
That came from my subconscious because I never worked at Hardee's. But when I was like 15, everyone was trying to get a job at Hardee's.
You wore that sailor dress. The drop-waisted sailor dress
that I wore
at a much tubbier and less flattering angle later. For like the world's worst family picture where I...
Wow. Woo, guys.
Memory lane
just
brought on by Hardee's. Oh, wow.
Also, in other like bits of trivia, we haven't had a Hardee's in Moscow for, I don't know.
I don't think I've ever eaten at a Hardee's.
No, neither have I. And I didn't remember.
Literally my only knowledge
came out
was Becca's outfit she wore to a job interview.
Well, also, I'm going to mention here is that I think the reason that random thing came to mind is I was going to say, if you decided to get a job and then you decided you didn't want that job, because that's what I did with Hardee's when I was 15 or 14. I don't know. I think I must have been 15 because there was a big rumor going around that you didn't have to be 16 to get a job at Hardee's.
It was everybody's big chance to get in on the Hardee's.
Anyway, whatever the scene is at Hardee's now, if you are thinking, maybe I'll take that job, maybe I'll quit that job, maybe I started that job and it was no fun, so I think I'll quit.
Yeah, totally.
That's how you can approach a job. I mean, it's a free country, and if you don't like Hardee's, then quit.
Don't work at Hardee's. As we don't.
As we once considered, but we decided against.
Took it into consideration once.
Whilst wearing a sailor dress.
With a drop waist and pleats
and
after that.
Polka dots, right?
Oh, that dress
anyway,
is probably coming right back in.
Probably. Yeah. I think it would flatter me greatly if I was to wear it now. But the point is if you have a calling is very different, right?
Yeah, yes.
And I think being a wife and a mother is not a job that you can just say, actually, in the end, I find that I don't like this.
Yeah.
It's different. It actually is a calling, and you have to treat it differently.
And I would say that being a Christian...
You know, the benefits of this job are not what I hoped they would be.
Being a Christian mother is a calling, whether or not you're staying at home or if you're working somewhere else. You may have additional jobs on top of your calling.
Yeah, yeah. No, but...
Which is part of the confusion, because we don't think that necessarily has to interfere calling.
No, but I just mean motherhood.
It could, but it doesn't have
you
to.
You being a mother and a wife, regardless of if you have a paycheck elsewhere, if you're a wife and a mother, you can't treat that as a job that you discovered you didn't care for very much, so you're just going to sign off.
I'd rather farm it out to somebody else. Yeah,
that's not on the table. And I think that if you approach it that way, as if it's a job, and you're assessing everything from, like, I don't like the paycheck, I don't like the benefits.
The benefits are not great.
The boss isn't nice. Whatever
he's
it is.
He's four, and that's my fault that he's not nice. I'm joking. I'm not talking about Moses. Moses is very nice, but I realize he's also four, and I was not saying. I just mean, frequently that is the thing, is these... ungrateful dorks that do these terrible things to me all the time, and you're it's like never that doesn't reflect poorly on you at all that the people around you are such turkeys. That's always been a kind of a novelty to me when you see a mom out with her kids who are behaving really badly.
Right.
And she's putting on a great show for everyone else to, like,
feel sorry for her.
For people to look at her and be like, man, you have terrible luck. But you're like, actually, dear woman who I saw just the other day yelling at your children that they're grounded in goodwill. Oh, it's no. not the kids that look bad right now. Like, mm-mm. and their idea mm-mm. of, like, everybody else will gather around and notice my poor cross I have to bear.
Yeah.
It's like, ooh.
Well, I think whenever you're pity-mongering for yourself, it never...
Pity-mongering is the worst kind of mongering. There's...
But how often do we do it, and how unwinsome is it always?
It never gets what you wanted anyways. That's the thing that's funny.
I don't think that's true, though. There are some people who love to go around and bestow their pity on people who clearly are pity mongers. But, that's you know, true. I don't know. I don't understand that particular personality trait because I don't have it. If somebody's making a great to-do about their injury that's not that bad, I have a very hard time rushing to their aid and sympathy because it
all came back to me. I was like, didn't we talk about this on the podcast before?
No, it's yep, one of that the ones was one we of the deleted. Ones we deleted.
I was like, I have this vague feeling that we're about to go off the rails on this discussion.
I know. Yeah, it's true. We're waving at Moses. He's being very cute through the window.
Peeking.
He's been really cute.
Peeking.
There's one other thing, Rach, that we were going to do here, and we're going to do it on the last two podcasts that we deleted.
Oh, yeah.
But everyone, this is what happens every year.
We want to invite you. Becca's worried we're going to get the intelligence wrong on this, right?
No, well, what I'm saying is every year we start talking about Grace Agenda on the podcast while it's happening. And we say, having Grace Agenda right
come.
Now.
You should have come.
But this is us telling you in advance that you should totally come to Grace Agenda, which is here in Moscow.
End of April. I want to say the 26th.
She's looking it up
details.
Here we go.
The theme of the whole conference is the School of Practical Christianity. It's April 24th and 25th here in Moscow. And so you should know that Grace Agenda itself is a free conference.
Mm-hmm.
It is, so you don't have to register for the conference. You just have to find yourself a way to get to Idaho for it. And we have a women's pre-conference, which happens
on Friday morning.
Yep. And then the main conference is, and there's usually there's a men's pastor's pre-conference. So the women's conference and the men's
and the pastor's pre-conference. So yeah. We'll be speaking at the Friday morning.
You don't have
Friday
to be a pastor
morning.
To go to that. It's just the theme is...
I never really
I
check on what
so.
They're doing over there at that
No,
one.
But the theme, I think it's just more geared towards pastors. But whatever. That'll be Friday morning that we do it. And at some point during the program, I think it will be after the women's conference, before the evening stuff happens. We're actually going to have some kind of a what have you shindig at
Meet
my
and
house.
Greet
you
at
can
Rachel's
come to
house.
My house.
You can take a selfie with her sink.
You can, if you should so desire.
You can get in her sink.
If your heart speaks to you and you know, you're probably all going to come be like, this is not big. Just a little sink.
Or like you've imagined something like a swimming pool.
Yeah, exactly.
It's really
But we're going to do that. The Bible Reading Challenge always hosts now our second year this time. Always now, from here on out. A meet and greet and in-person get to visit, psalm sing, fun stuff going on then. And if you're part of the Bible Reading Challenge, the moderators and families and people love to do a Sabbath dinner in the homes, in different homes with people. So if you're here, you can sign up for that if you're on the Facebook page with the Bible Reading Challenge.
Right.
It will be there.
And then it's also, same weekend, is a prospective student weekend for NSA. So if you have, like, high school kids or whatever that want to check it out. They can sit in on classes. You just want to
check out these strange people in Idaho.
And Moscow's fun in April, right? Isn't it? Usually maybe it'll blizzard at us, actually.
It's possible that it won't be fun, but we'll do our best to try to pull it out.
The weather might be making
it can be incredibly beautiful, or it might.
It's still April.
It might be testy.
But then also, so there's an NSA prospective student weekend. Can Impress usually has like an evening.
They do an open house thing, and then there will probably be something at Logos. There's a lot of like meet the community, that is just a really fun way to come and fellowship with saints from all over. And especially, we've really enjoyed the, like, get to meet people in person.
That's been great. And it's always a really fun time. And we're telling you several months in advance, guys.
Yeah.
So rather than it being like, oh, last week was Grace Agenda, next year you should remember that.
Right. And if you register for it, you can, I guess if you're on the Facebook page, keep an eye on the Bible Reading Challenge Facebook page. If you're in the Bible Reading Challenge, there will be some specific to Grace Agenda invitations there. But otherwise, when you register, you can get information from the church office about places to stay and things that are available for people in town. In town.
And then we'll, as we get closer to it and we know what we're going to do for the what have you thing at Rachel's house, we will...
We'll slowly leak the hints about what we're going to do. And then probably at the last minute when we're actually doing it, we'll just do something completely different.
Yeah, that's my guess.
Becca, can you get maple bars?
I'll be like, no, I'm going to buy pinwheels.
We're going to get our best. You have to know in advance that there's no way it's going to be our most shining hospitality ever, because Grace Agenda is a wild time.
It's very wild.
But we will be delighted to have you all here and meet you in person.
Yeah. And it is funny, though, because it's a great weekend for everybody to come because there's so much going on and it's all like organized so that there are things to do. But it does mean that trying to like have anyone over to my house is probably not, you're going to have somebody to your house, but I just mean, it's like you're trying to prep talks. You're trying to be everywhere. You're trying to go to all the things. It's not the most calm moment to
no, do. But we love to do it and we love Moscow. So we love sharing it with other people. Yeah,
Moscow's worth visiting, guys. You should definitely
totally
come.
It totally is. And if you didn't have a reason to come to Idaho,
now
ever,
you do.
This is your big chance.
You kind of do have to mean to come to Idaho because
you don't pass through like on your way
on
somewhere
your way
else
to no. anything ever.
But no. Idaho is a beautiful state and well worth visiting. So
it is.
Yeah.
It's
so
totally
Becca,
gorgeous.
Do you have any
There's
tips?
The big plug that we gave, and so far, I don't think we've done anything on this podcast that makes me feel like we're going to have to delete it in the future. So.
Well, you haven't heard my tip yet.
No, I have not.
I have one because I keep being like,
hold that thought.
Yeah,
save
I keep
it for
being
the
like,
tip.
Oh, there's okay. my big tip, right, but right. I can't remember it right now.
Oh,
give
that's
me, it's
helpful.
In the kitchen. It's a kitchen tip.
Okay.
Specifically, a kitchen tip. What would it be, Becca? What would my kitchen tip be?
You just showed me your basket of measuring cups.
Yeah, that's not. I wasn't going to take that out on the tip street.
I have a really hot tip. This was so... It's just not a tip, everyone. I'm being facetious. This last weekend was Logos' auction, their big fundraising auction. And this is a little bit novel because Belle, my daughter, was asked to do the decorations. So she was running that show and I helped, but I was just helping her with what she needed
right.
help with. It was sort of like, you know, her vision, her stuff. And then she got Hero, my other daughter, to do the flowers. And so same thing, like they just ordered all the flowers. I was no part of that. And then Hero's trying to do like 30 arrangements on the day, which were really cute, I must say. But I'm a terrible florist. Terrible. So I'm trying to help her assembly line these things. And I'm like, Hero, what do you want me to do with this? Like show
funny?
Me how so... long you want the stems, because I will make bad decisions if you leave it to me. So so anyway, I'm trying to like do the like basic, this is how many roses in each one. This is how many of the other.
Yeah,
you know, like I'm trying to get it there for her. And then she would take them as I finished that, and she's putting the finishing touches on them. But there was these little, the theme was black and white. And so she was looking for flowers that would work with that. And there's, are they called Billy Balls?
Maybe.
Billy Balls, I think.
Is that
and
the
they
one
come
that
in
you
black.
Told me that they looked like a pellet?
Yeah, they're like, yeah. They're like little
like,
round.
No, I said, is that a like pom? You said it's a pom-pom. And I said, a mum? She said, no, like a pellet.
It is like a pellet. It's like a little, kind of almost
it's
hard.
Like a seed pod
anyway,
kind of a
well,
thing, yeah.
Well, but it's kind of like a chive. No, yeah. Sort of like a chive. But anyway, they have these really long stems. And they do come in black, but they weren't available in black. So the lady that was helping the girls do the ordering said, well, you can just paint them when they come. So guess who had that job? Was me painting all the Billy Balls. And so I'm like, this is bad because you don't want to paint the stem. You just want to get the... And they were told just spray paint. So that's what I had was black spray paint and these flowers with these really long stems. So I'm trying to... figure it out. Like
there is a floral spray paint, but that is not what you would use on something like that. It wouldn't have to be.
Yeah,
it wouldn't have to be a
because it was hard. It wasn't like petals that would crumple up. So I am pioneering new methods.
So this is Becca's tip
on Saturday.
I realized
I was pioneering
still on the tips.
Yeah. Well, this isn't a tip. Look at how early we are. It's not time for tips anyway. But I had this random really tall. Yeah, see?
Yeah.
I had this random really tall box that a roll of paper had been shipped in for the decoration.
Yeah, that was definitely the best idea.
So I then taped paper across the top of it, poked holes all over it with a skewer, dropped all of these in.
This seems like a familiar move to me, so I wonder when I'm like, oh yeah, obviously this is the choice.
And so then you just have all the blossoms sticking out the top and then spray paint those and then you can fish them all back out again. I tried it first with Saran Wrap, and that was a terrible move because the Saran Wrap tears, then the paint runs down in the holes, then the paint makes the Saran Wrap like curl up
and it pools
and do
weirdly.
Strange things.
Yeah, no, bad
paper,
idea.
Paper, guys, and poke holes with the skewer. Drop your blooms through.
There you go.
Paint the tops. Do that repeatedly, over and over and over and over and over for way too many blossoms. It was, I think it was, I don't know, 300 or so that I painted.
Yeah. Good job, you.
Yeah, that's why my hands are still black around the edges because it was like. Oh, it was a thing.
Like, man, every time I'm in my kitchen, I'm like, remember, Rachel.
Remember
good
the
tip.
Tip.
Good tip.
Do you want me to start listing things like kitchen soap?
No.
It won't
help me with that. I just keep thinking that truly.
You know what
I
think I told
idea.
Everyone a few weeks back, but we deleted it, is that we have one cupboard now in my in my kitchen, and it caused me to overreact and make labels for everything that were in that's inside. It's what happened.
I don't think you told me that you'd made labels, but
oh,
I should have known.
Oh, the labels. They're
great,
everywhere.
That was something that we told about. Becca had a satire of her own life dream. and she was fool enough to tell me the satire of her own life, wherein she had a crisis.
When you say a dream, it was a genuine dream. Like
she was asleep.
It wasn't
she
a
dreamed,
hope and a
she dreamed
aspiration.
A caricature
a
of herself.
Yeah.
Wherein she was throwing a party, but the labels for individual slices of pizza had failed to come on time, and they couldn't get the sticker labels on the tops of every piece of pizza.
Yeah.
And that speaks to, like, the heart of Becca's need to decoratively label.
But it was one of those kind of stressful dreams where the party that everyone's here and the labels haven't even
but
come
yet. But
you're
doing it all wrong, and how will they know to eat this pizza
if I haven't
put a sticker
on it? I have to label every slice. It was a big triangular label that I was going to put on the very top of each pizza piece.
I made a really good, I just really enjoyed that because I thought even in my biggest fit of satire, I would not have thought of that. Becca had to dream it. She had to dream it herself.
Rachel wouldn't have made fun of me that bad.
If Rachel had the talent to be a graphic designer, then we would know how much I have an instinct for labels. But because I don't have that talent, there's nothing for it.
Well, I labeled the things in my cupboard, and I'm not sorry.
You don't need to be sorry.
They're real good, Rach. And I have, because we talked about this on one of our deleted ones. I have a chocolate and vanilla cupboard in my little baking center. And Rachel made fun of me for that too, but it makes me happy.
I didn't make fun of you. You did. You never. You
scoffed.
Never.
You did.
You made fun of yourself.
Just by being myself.
Just by She's saying like, you have a chocolate and vanilla cupboard. Actually, I have no objections to that. My kitchen does not have as much cupboardry as it could accommodate. Well, can't accommodate.
My kitchen has no cupboardry at all until right now, where I have one cupboard. You guys, it's big. It's a big time. I'm basically a little too pompous now that I have one cupboard. It doesn't have doors yet on, but it's got shelves, so I labeled the things. And I did two big bottles of vanilla. This is what we were talking about. This is what started it off, is I made two big bottles of vanilla and put really good labels on.
I do have a tip.
Okay.
That I got out of my restaurant cookbook.
If I stalled long enough, we knew it would come back to her.
No, it's really weird. I haven't used it yet, but I ordered xanthan gum. Yeah, xanthan gum.
I have always seen that, but not used it.
Yeah, but I found out that it's just not generally used in home kitchens because such a small amount of it thickens something. Mm. But the comment was, if you're ever making restaurant-sized batches of sauces and things, it is the best thickener because it thickens without changing it. So little of it thickens it that it does it without changing the flavor at all. Where if you have a big vat, if you're making like soup that needs to be thickened in some
way. Can you thicken soup with it?
Yeah, you could, sauces and stuff.
Weird.
But the point here is that
we live a life
if you ever try to make like a really large quantity, like sometimes this is a situational problem that maybe nobody else has other than me. But if you're trying to make like when I made a bunch of roasts in the big pot on the stovetop. So I'm actually making a pot roast, and you take the meat out and you need to like thicken the sauce.
Right.
Well, it can be a real turkey to work with that volume of sauce when you're trying to, because what I typically do is actually make a roux in another pan and add some of it until it's really thick and then mix and that then into the big pan. Yeah. But then you're like frantically stirring, and allegedly, I haven't done it yet, but allegedly for such a time and such a place, restaurants use xanthan gum.
Okay.
And I'm ready now. I'm locked and loaded.
You're prepared to tell us how it
to goes. Have that ultimate moment where I'm like, I thought ahead on this and I ordered xanthan gum.
Well, I'm interested. Hear how that one goes down for you.
I if you come to my house sometime and you're like, what means this jello jiggler of a meat sauce? You will know that it did not work as well as we had hoped. You'll be like, well, Rachel, great tip.
A nice slice of gravy with your meat.
Jiggly gravy. Yuck. But yes, anyways, that kind of thing goes sort of prepared ahead.
And I know that this is really, like, while we're on the subject of tips, this is really obvious, so everyone, you're going to feel like, I know that already. But for the few people out there that maybe haven't thought of it, you really should make your own vanilla extract because it's easy and it's very festive. And you just have to do it in advance because you can't use it right away. You have to pace yourself. But I bought a bunch of beans a while ago from that Beanilla. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, probably.
The online place. And you can get a huge passel of vanilla beans, which is very handy to have around anyway. Because at least locally, I hate paying
$9
ridiculous amounts
per
for a tiny
snippet.
Wee bean. But this time, it was a big bundle.
I really wish I'd seen the vanilla crisis coming.
I know.
That was the one that where I was really like, why was I not reading the times?
I know. It's important to
That time when it just switched over from the Costco vanilla bean $9.99 to like $35.
I know.
You were like, what?
It's bad. And the thing is, vodka is cheap. So you can get yourself a bottle of vodka and pop some vanilla beans
in
there.
At some point, I actually
make a cute label.
I think at some point I was doing more extracts because you can also make like a orange extract, like any, like lots of the zest and stuff in a alcohol sitting for long enough will make it delicious.
Which I like. I like the theory.
Fine. I failed to follow through on execution.
I do use so much vanilla that actually starting a couple of big bottles of it.
Starting a vanilla farm seemed like the best.
Just seemed like a good idea. Plus, I had this bag of beans that I needed to do something with. So, I have two, like, I don't know. Each one is maybe 4 or 5 cups in each bottle. So, it's a nice sized amount of vanilla. And my plan is to let it just steep in there for
a while. I used to do that, but then I didn't replace the vanilla beans.
Well, tell me this. Everyone says when you have used a vanilla bean, rather than just chucking it, you know, like if you've used it for extract or you've used it for a sauce or whatever, then just pop it into some sugar and leave it for a while and then you'll have vanilla sugar. And my question is, though, what do you do with that when you're done?
I think that people, I've also always wondered that because I don't feel my life short without vanilla sugar.
Yeah, like
I would imagine that if you made the sugar, then if you used your vanilla sugar in any recipe that called for vanilla, you would be
extra vanilla.
Yeah, but flavor. I feel that
seems like a lot of hoo-ha just to.
I agree. I've never actually.
I mean, maybe done on the that. Like if you dusted it on the top of
actually,
something.
I did do it one time, and I ran into exactly that moment of To what end do I have this vessel of vanilla?
One person suggested that you blitz up the bean itself in the food processor with the sugar. And I feel like that's just weird because then you've got little bits of bean and that doesn't seem okay. Everybody else just said, no, just steep it in the sugar for a while and then take it out and you'll have vanilla flavored sugar. But it just seems to me like maybe now you have a product that nobody needed, but...
Maybe now you've done that weird thing. Sometimes I do things like that, though. Not the vanilla. Sometimes it's like the 80-20 rule, where sometimes you do something that just really knocks your socks off, and you're so pleased with yourself, and it's all brilliant. Yeah. And it gives you great joy. But then, even sometimes the same little kitchen technique a year later is not attractive to you.
Yeah.
Okay, I can remember things that appeal to me randomly, like someone who's like, oh, whenever I'm... It was like someone who always makes stock regularly. So they just keep a bag in the freezer of all the stuff when you're cutting vegetables and you have, like, the odds and ends of different things. Like, they just throw it, like, leftover. Well, some part of that, I don't know why, appeals to me, but only for one phase in my life. Then there's another time when I'm like, blah, I don't want a bag of odds and ends. Right. Like, you have to be in the mood to be feeling like this is an enjoyable task.
Or like saving all of your eggshells for the garden or all of your coffee
You
grounds.
Finally said the thing that made me remember my tip.
Perfect.
Guys, okay, this is actually a total life-changing game changer.
Okay.
You might all already know this, but it just struck me the other day that what if there are people out here without this knowledge?
Okay, I'm just here to tell you.
So you're cracking eggs, and there's a little woodle of eggshell at the bottom of the egg. You know, you crack it, you get some shell in there.
Yeah.
And you can't get it out. With a spoon, it's incredibly evasive.
You chase it forever.
And you bury it in the other ingredients. Yeah. Yeah. You get your finger in there, you can't catch it. But what you can catch it with is an eggshell. That the eggshell itself, if you crack it and a little piece goes in there, just use the half of an eggshell and dip it in there and it like attracts it. It's incredible. It scoops right inside the eggshell, no problem. So,
interesting.
So, do you not know this tip?
Well, you say this and I'm like, yeah, I know about that. But I've never consciously
used that technique.
When you say that, I'm like, oh yeah, that totally makes sense, but I think I still would get a spoon out unless I was feeling particularly
But the spoon
lazy.
Is very hard to catch it with.
It is.
Yeah, so you actually, I'm telling you that the eggshell functions like what like you would magnet. Have thought that the spoon would work like, but the spoon will not work
Rachel,
like that.
Rachel, now that you've brought us to this subject, I have a tip myself.
Okay,
but this might...
Everyone, I hope that you feel your lives full of
transforming.
Peace now that I finally got that news to you.
But I probably have spoken of this before because I was so smug about it. But no, I probably just told you on the phone, but this is a real specific problem that I have with soup night is there's at least one recipe of soup that involves cream cheese.
Oh, yeah, so, yeah. You have spoken.
You put the cream cheese in there.
I feel like
you... Have I done this on the podcast?
I feel like you have,
but
I don't know. I don't know.
Well, I still feel good about it, so I'm going to say it again. And that is that, like, I get peeved.
Whenever Becca's making soup with cream cheese at Hardee's, she...
in a sailor dress, this is what happens. Is that I get annoyed because you open the cream cheese, which... Let's be real. It's terrible packaging. I don't know who thought up.
You know what?
Why?
No.
Why?
No. Whoever thought up the way that you have to use cream cheese, what they did not take into consideration was that you would ever need to use more than one cream cheese.
Right.
Because by the time you've opened one, you have a little film of cream cheese on your hands, which makes grabbing that little tinfoil packet just murder. Like you're trying to...
I know, I hate it.
Oh, that's
And the thing is, all right, so you open up your tinfoil of doom, and then you get a knife out and you scrape the cream cheese off of the foil, missing a bunch as you go because there's little blats of it all over the foil. And then you try and thwack it off into the pot of soup. And you try and do that without it causing a great splash. And when I am doing it for soup night, because I'm multiplying it by 9 or whatever, I'm doing 9 patties of cream cheese into this. So I'm getting progressively more
annoyed
as I go. And you're missing a bunch of cream cheese. Well, okay, here's the answer, you guys. You open up the foil and then you just dip it in the top of the soup. You don't want to get the outside of the foil in the soup because that feels very unhygienic. But just the inside of the foil, and it swipes the whole thing clean, and you pull it out and you throw it in the garbage.
It
takes no time.
I'll tell you that
no time.
My technique with the cream cheese, now that we bring this up, is I do not use a knife with cream cheese ever.
Do you use your fingers and pull off little globs?
No.
Some people do that.
That's gross.
I can't.
No.
I can't with that.
Do you know what I do?
What?
Is that I peel the envelope across the top, the foil, and then...
You squeeze it?
No!
Okay, why are you only cutting the top off?
You have just grotesque suggestions. I don't put cream cheese in soup. I don't have a soup that I put cream cheese in. So when I'm doing cream cheese, it's because I am making that decadent pound cake that I don't know, or frosting or something. So most of the time I'm trying to get a thing of cream cheese into
mixer.
A bowl.
Yeah,
not into a wet receptacle.
Right.
So
well, it has to be
hot.
It's the...
Yeah, I know, but here's the
hot
thing.
Hot and wet.
If you snap it open, if you peel it, you get it ready to go, you snap it and flip it, I fling cream cheese from the tinfoil, and then I worry not with anything that's left on it. But it's only ever... a very small...
And you couldn't have your mixer... You couldn't have the bowl in your mixer when you were doing that because you couldn't aim properly.
No, but I do follow the general rules of move fast with the tin foil and it won't stick to you.
Yeah, well, move fast into the top of the soup and you will feel like you've never gotten cheese out as that. But I do have... I have an anti-tip. Which is that after I've gotten the blobs of cream cheese into the soup, then I hate my life because I'm trying to incorporate that into the soup.
Murder.
It's
murder.
Terrible.
And also cream cheese it melts quickly in one way, but when it's a clob in a thing, it doesn't go fast.
Yeah.
I think you should consider a different approach. But
well, I need to figure out that approach because the problem is...
I wonder if you could get it, but then you'd have to mess up something else. I was going to say, if you put all the cream cheese in another thing and add the hot soup to it and mix it.
No, because it's like 6 gallons of soup.
No, I'm not saying all of it. I'm saying like you were tempering it, sort of.
Yeah, I've wondered about that, but then you have to use the mixer, and the mixer's always already being used for...
You know what
this
reminds me of? This is really taking us back to our earlier conversation, but you know when you need to like temper the eggs for something because you want them to function as a... You want to make a custard. You don't want to make scrambled eggs suspended in a cream sauce.
It is the worst.
And But the thing is it's all the same ingredients put in a different order.
Yeah.
What we were talking about earlier with the combination of theology and delight in the domestic is sort of one of those things, because yeah, we're like, we're trying to say like, of course you should still have this and that. And it, but it's like the ingredients, of course you should have theology and of course you should have practical outworking, but the manner and method of getting those things together.
And it's like, if you put the butter in after the egg, you're just going to have pellets of butter and that's it. You're never going to be able to cream it into the sugar again. And you're right.
It's It's like, it's actually, the problem is the order of hearing the word, delighting in the word, growing in the word, and also actively obeying the word. Those things going together in the order that they're meant to go in. Yep. This is why whichever direction you come, that's not the way it's supposed to be happening. If you came to be like, I'm going to be the best housewife in the world, but you actually don't know who God is or how this, or how his character is reflected in anything.
Right.
Well, it's not going to be a beautiful thing that happens.
And if you're fabulously anti-feminist and you know all of the Pauline teaching, but you actually don't delight in your home, and it's also going to be a barrel of
right. And fun. So the reality is that sometimes the fact that it has to be an individual person's walk with the Lord in obedience is why that's the only way that it is actually potent and effective, right? Is that what we know about God, we believe, we hear more about him in his word, we respond in obedience, and he continues to grow us and strengthen us and teach us and reveal things to us, instead of like coming in hot with I'm just gonna adopt all of the external things.
Right.
And then you realize you have none of the support for that. You're just putting scrambled eggs in the custard. You're just making yourself the world's nastiest ice cream ever.
Nice pilly ice cream.
Yeah, with little blobs of eggy yuckadoo in there. So, but that was a real random thing.
Metaphor for the end.
But you get the idea, which is that nothing is wrong with any, you're not saying something's wrong with the ingredients to say that the end effect is not what it's meant to be like.
Exactly.
Yeah, well, there was a real wrap up.
We did that.
Yeah. Thanks for coming to our super long tips day. And I hope you all have a chance to fish an egg shell out of an egg
in the near future.
Maybe just go do one now just to see what happens.
Fun.
Yeah, just to see what happens.
All right.
All right, till next time.
Bye.